evening and welcome to Body, Mind, Spirit Oasis. You're listening to WKNH Keene 91.3 FM. And this is your host, John Michael Dumais. For the next 2 hours, we'll be offering inspiring conversations and enlightening experiences for creating a more vital and harmonious self, community, and planet. The next hour of programming is called Oasis Forum, where we feature interviews with local and regional practitioners, artists, authors, visionaries, and activists. We'll be discussing news of the day, important books, developments in health and healing, and many other issues for creating a sustainable present and future. Musicians, poets, and other artists will be performing their inspirational works. Then, later this evening, from 8 to 9 p.m., tune in for Oasis Journeys, where we will offer an ever-changing menu of inspirational readings, meditations, inner journeys, and other mind-expanding excursions, accompanied by New Age and ambient music and nature soundscapes and textures. Oasis Journeys will help you relieve stress and anxiety, deepen self-awareness, and enhance your sense of well-being. Now, welcome to Oasis Forum, where we explore issues that can help us positively evolve our lives, our society, and our planet. Oasis Forum features authors, activists, artists, and healers working to increase our appreciation of the interconnectedness of life on Earth. Each week, we explore a new topic that impacts our health, our families, our communities, our work, and our environment. Our goal is not just to discuss present challenges, but to develop an awareness of root causes and, importantly, to explore potential solutions. At Oasis Forum, our aim is to inspire hope and share practical ideas for creating a world that works for all. Good evening, this is John Michael, and welcome to Oasis Forum. We are grateful to have with us this evening Lonnie Brown, PhD, from Peterborough. He is the author of Self-Actuated Healing and Enlightenment in Our Time. He, in fact, was the author of the Healing Personal to Planetary column that you may have been reading in the shop over the last 2 years. He was the original author now, before he passed it along to some other folks here in the area. His writings on holistic health and contemporary spirituality have appeared on AOL's Alternative Medicine Forum and in Alternative Health Practitioner, Yoga Journal, and many other progressive publications. Dr. Brown teaches holistic health, mind-body healing, and stress reduction courses at hospitals, schools, and businesses throughout the U.S. He has taught the beginner's yoga class at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center in Keene for over a decade. Lonnie's website also features essays, tapes, books, and links to a variety of integrative health sources at www.holistic.com/Lonnie. And Lonnie Brown, welcome to Oasis Forum.
Nice to be here.
It's really wonderful to have you here. It's on our fourth program here of Oasis Forum. We've just really been underway and really been happy to begin some conversations with local folks here who are committed to creating a difference in our world and helping others to tap into their true potential. So you're right in the middle of the bullseye as far as the kind of folks that I really want to talk to here and would like to see these conversations shared in the community. So thanks for being with us tonight.
Great. My pleasure, John Michael. I really felt simpatico with your mission statement that started the program. It was a very comprehensive overview of what we'd like to have happen.
Well, we don't want to leave anything out, do we? There's a lot to talk about here with you tonight, and I'm sure we could talk with several hours, but so I want to just kind of jump right in. And if you don't mind, I'd like to jump in with a statement that was published in the Keene Sentinel about this time last year, in which you said, we vote with our money and our words as well as our ballots. And then you went on to say, there's a great battle going on for the soul of the country and for the world. What does that mean? What is the great battle that's going on right now?
Oh, boy, you jumped right into it.
It's, yes.
Well, it manifests politically, but it's not just blue states and red states. It's more like fear and retrogressive forces, you know, the worst of which is manifested in terrorism, but everything that is sort of opposed to change in a highly changing world. And then the, what I call the more enlightened view of acceptance and brotherhood, all those good things. So that's how I see it. Sometimes it's a little too simplistic, but I wrote that just before the election process last year. And I think there is a, maybe it's always been that way, the idea of like retrogressive forces resisting change and progressive forces creating it.
Mm-hmm. So is it necessary to have that kind of creative tension in order for change to move forward?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, change comes no matter what, but I think in times of rapid change and highly accelerated change in every area of our culture and society, we have extra leverage to influence outcomes over time. So it's like it's unprecedented, and it's also a tremendous opportunity to steer our own future, to make cultural inputs now. For instance, like the internet, it's still in its nascent form. The whole phenomenon is only a decade old, where we have global, multidimensional communications, basically free, available to everybody. I was very optimistic for the internet and cyberspace and the World Wide Web to be very new positive forces for up-leveling human consciousness planet worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a little disillusioning to see those very tools used for hate and exploitation and so on. So we carrying this fight, could say, or this like a timeless battle, right into our new media.
Could we not, really?
Right, you know, right. It's a manifest of all human behavior.
But it does seem that the internet, if we're going to talk about that for a bit, it accelerates things, does it not? It's kind of like it's sometimes been described as the brain, or the global brain. I think of Peter Russell's talking about the global brain, or certainly one way in which the global brain talks back to itself. We're talking back to ourselves, but the talking is a cacophony oftentimes. And how do we make sense of the different types of messages? What would you recommend for, you know, say a mother of a 15-year-old calls in and she's concerned about all the different influences on the internet, and how would you recommend she talk to her son or daughter about making sense of that?
Well, talking is the operative word there. I'm a great proponent of communication on a regular basis. It's almost secondary, actually, what she says, as the fact that the avenues of two-way communication are well established. Mm-hmm. You befriend your children, and they'll share with you. That's what I think. Mm-hmm. And it's two ways.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, it's not easy. It's a real issue. What is available, and the sort of corrupting influences that have gotten into what was supposed to be my ideal medium,
mm-hmm,
for worldwide, high-speed, global, omnidirectional communications. We need that democraticization,
mm-hmm,
of information and knowledge, mm-hmm, and hopefully wisdom. As one of my sort of premises is that wisdom can be manifest,
mm-hmm,
online,
mm-hmm,
if you can imagine. Just the next step up from knowledge is, mm-hmm, plenty of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that somehow we gel, we act together, we actually manifest on a higher level because we're all connected.
Mm-hmm.
Teilhard de Chardin toyed with this idea of the new sphere, the next step in human evolution, when we're basically like more in touch with all of our commonality than not.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the transition we're facing right now.
Mm-hmm. So how do we work with the various voices and different constituencies vying to be the ones to be the purveyors of wisdom that keep that you know, I understand about going to the commonalities, and I think that that's true, and I think there's a opportunity, especially in communities, especially where people know each other. to do that, but there seems to be a lot of, you know, negative blogging, a lot of hate, mm-hmm. as you were saying earlier, and mm-hmm. and a lot of vying for, you know, going back to that original comment in the Keene Sentinel, that quote of yours, you know, kind
for
of a battle for the soul here. And, you know,
yes.
And so what is this likely to look like as we unfold this very democratic vision where anyone can say whatever they want, kind
mm-hmm.
of, and, you know, how do you see wisdom bubbling up in that medium, for example?
It is bubbling up, despite some of the obstacles, in the same proportion as wisdom exists in the human population. It's just so readily available. I would look for like-minded people in spirituality, contemporary thought, and what I call enlightenment, the sort of general higher awareness of our unity, you might say, and how to act from that level. But the opportunities are all over in cyberspace and out. I think it has to do with our intention. That's a big formative force that you start from. What do you intend to do in this world with these tools?
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of like go from there. I would say, you know, I was very disillusioned to see the rise of the intentional virus propagation in cyberspace. What mm-hmm. what is that all about? You have supposedly very educated people out to disrupt the very system that, you know, supports us all. I'm in a quandary about that. Does that mean that it's like the digital equivalent? Well, the virus analogy holds, but it's because it's a human intention to disrupt.
Mm.
I wonder if we're seeing basically a type of evil in the works.
Or do you think maybe it's some it's an outlet, because as we're, you know, you were saying earlier, there's a democratization of the voice, of the collective voice, in a way, and many people do not have an outlet. We do exist in these days, even in the United States, under fairly oppressive media, media that doesn't necessarily respond to what's going on, that tends to propagate more of fear and lower level vibrational types of stuff that keep people in a state of agitation and fear. You know, alternative voices, especially in the last few years, seems to have not been very popular in the media, of coming from wherever they are, whether it's from science or, you know, politicians or the military. Alternative voices seem to be shouted down in some way. So, and I'm wondering if in some way, you know, that tendency to want to destroy as part of that whole cycle of creation and destruction, maybe in some way, shall we say, a not exactly an evolved way of saying, wait a minute, this isn't working for me. Wait a minute, you know, the way the corporations are controlling things doesn't work for me.
Mm.
And maybe these people, you know, like you say, they're smart, and maybe they're not really connected to their hearts, and maybe they have no other way of you know, sharing what their disgust is or their discomfort is with the way things
right.
are.
It's sort of like the cyberspace equivalent of going postal, I guess. You're saying you sort of like their own high-tech antisocial behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Based on, you know, their own sort of difficulties and negativities,
mm-hmm.
and lack of outlet. That's a good theory. It just astounds me, the popularity of this type of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It's disillusioning.
I'm wondering if you would, while we're here on the topic of computers and the Internet, if you, you know, would comment on the violence that's a part of so many you know, games, especially games that mm-hmm. the boys tend to play,
mm-hmm.
you know, multiplayer games, now massive multiplayer games, which are increasingly, you know, moving the violence out into, you know, a sort of virtual world, you know, where, you know, people team up and, you know, kill each other off and that sort of thing. And, it, you know, I keep scratching my head because I look at computers as being potentially so wonderful.
Exactly.
And you may be familiar with the new Journey of the Wild Divine, biofeedback
yes.
game
yes.
that came out, which maybe you can speak to a little bit. But if you can first speak to, you know, what is this that we're purging from ourselves, and or are we setting ourselves up for something unpleasant by encouraging or not intercepting this kind of behavior and trying to move it along to something higher?
Well, I definitely think there's an effect on children that have high exposure to sort of the weaponry, shoot 'em up, you know, warring, destruction, input, that type of programming. Kids are impressionable, and if that's the model, that will eventually become the behavior. There's no doubt in my mind. That's not to say that we can legislate or moralize from, you know, a central governmental sort of decree to get violence out of video games. Again, I think it comes from good communication. You know, in our culture, it often comes down to PR, and we need good PR for goodwill. Now, if you know what I mean, like war and all the destruction we see on mainstream media is very engaging, it's very hot, it's very sexy, and that's what makes the news we see. But I think there's a lot more going on. I did an electronic newsletter called Enlightenment Online.
That's right.
And I had a section called Good News. You know, I'm really dedicated to that idea of revealing solutions, successes, great leaps forward in human cooperation. And there's a lot, but it doesn't get the airplay. It doesn't. It's not as juicy or sensational and so on.
Is there? I totally agree with the fact that we don't have enough of that, the good news. And is there a way to make it juicier? Is there a way to bring it to people's
yes.
attention that this isn't just about, shall we say, entertainment, which I think, you know, we could have a long discussion about what that's about. But it's really about, you know, refocusing and, again, using the word that you used before, having a different intention mm-hmm. about, you know, how it is that we spend our money, how it is we spend our time, and the kind of energy that we choose to spend most of our time in. I mean, I just think of the news as such. It's not that we don't want to be informed, but do I really need to know about every murder that happens, you know, for mm-hmm. 200 miles around or across the globe?
Mm-hmm.
Is that really news, or is, you know, something more uplifting news?
All that's going on, the numbers of casualties, wherever they are the truth. It behooves us to know. But I would just like to see more balance. Why don't even the major news networks have one little segment? I mean, they have a sports segment. They have all kinds of little programming categories. One of them should be good news. And it should be made entertaining. That's what you're competing with.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of excitement around good developments. I had very high hopes as a youth for the United Nations. I believe that was one of the next best steps after the catastrophe of World War II. And I still hold that concept in high regard, although just in the last week, the United Nations has really taken some black eyes for malfeasance and corruption within it and in its ranks. So it's sort of a disillusioning but a realistic view of what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You do the best you can.
We do have a lot of work ahead of us, there's no question about it. I think of the excitement that I, you know, have observed in children's eyes as they get involved with environmental issues and mm-hmm. You know, start to take a real stake in what happens in the world and the community around them. And that excitement, I wonder if it's lost on the media in some way, because the media seems to be very much a mouthpiece for the cultural status quo, for consumerism. And can you say anything about where you see the media going and how you might envision it changing and what would have to happen?
There is, of course, alternative media, and there's more outlets than ever before. There's the hundreds of cable channels, and some of them are actually very exceptional and cutting edge, and the public TV is still really high quality, and your own program is making its contribution right now in Keene, New Hampshire. And just talking about new ideas, higher vision, cooperation, what works for the planet. I think there is a groundswell, a grassroots emergence of what we could call the new consciousness. The unity concept in all spheres of human endeavor. I'm hopeful, despite some of my pessimistic views that we've already mentioned, computer viruses and all that. You know, Gandhi said, in the end, good will always actually triumphs. Mm-hmm. And it's a forever battle.
Mm-hmm. So let's now move to the more general topic and kind of weave in some of what we've been discussing. But the more general topic that I know you love to talk about, and that is, what is enlightenment?
Mm.
What is enlightenment, Lonnie?
Well, that's, of course, the unanswerable question, which I tried to answer in my book, of course.
We'll have to try, but we can't just be silent here on the air, honey.
We could, yes. Maybe we'll have some silence and the answer will emerge.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's many levels, there's many traditions and definitions. But in my understanding, it's actually our very basic original essence. It's not something we attain. It's something we sort of realize that we already have.
Mm-hmm.
It's an awakening. It's an understanding of the connectedness and the sort of the flow that you're in. It's would be basically, you might say, the opposite of isolation.
Mm-hmm.
You get to a point where it's an aha, we really are all connected.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes your outlook and that changes your choices and so on. There's degrees and you know, you forget and the ego comes into play, but there is something as a sort of a threshold of understanding, and I think it's emerging strongly, more popularly in our time than ever before. This is the hopeful side of the scenario, that in effect, enlightenment, it could be seen as like the object of all religions in a time when we are transcending religion and manifesting spirituality. That's the threshold, that's the transition I see
mm-hmm.
that we're in right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's real time, it's living spirit, it's who we all are, it's basic human potential. It's the underlying, unseen substrate of all our regular personalities and neuroses and everything. We all couldn't even all have that if we weren't below or before pristine, perfect, and participating in the universal.
Mm-hmm.
That's one definition.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could go off in a thousand directions from there. Well, let's talk about how one might experience that. If it's something that we already are, is there anything that we can do?
It's a great question. You know, I said it's something we already are, but we forgot.
Mm.
So we have to remember. That's, you know, Ram Dass wrote, Be Here Now, mm-hmm. Remember.
Mm. One of my favorite authors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have to, like, undo the sort of programming that we've adopted coming into this world, this culture, this society, all our identities, all our assumptions, and so on. Those are incidental
mm-hmm.
to enlightened mind.
And yet we sometimes cling to those as our very identity and have a difficult time
sure.
letting them go.
So anything that helps quiet the mind
mm-hmm.
and calm the soul, and I first point to, universally, the practice of meditation. It works.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for all, good on many levels. It's good for your health. It's good for your spiritual insight, you know, your soul growth. And a lot of people are getting that. Now, it's not, like, for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
There's some, like, personality types that just can't sit still.
Mm-hmm.
And then I recommend Tai Chi, another sort of type of moving
mm-hmm.
meditation.
Mm-hmm.
It comes back to conscious intention and how you utilize that capacity.
Mm-hmm. I think of the T-shirt meditation, it's not what you think.
Exactly.
But for those of us who may not be familiar with meditation, or and certainly there are many different forms of meditation, how would you simply define what meditation is for our listeners?
You're absolutely right. There are many forms and traditions and permutations of the idea, but basically it's the application of awareness on a non-material, non-physical, non-external sensory direction like we're usually used to, but what I see is internal or universal, the shift of attention and awareness to those levels of being or knowing. So when you can sort of like perceive your thinking process and not wholly identify with it, you've become the witness, the meditator.
Mm.
You see, that's a one step back before identifying with the drama and the storyline and your own reactions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a type of beholding from sitting quietly. There's all kinds of methods you can start with, just focusing on your breath, and that's very good. But I have a saying, you don't meditate in English.
Mm-hmm.
It's an experience. It's not a thought.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't stop our minds from thinking.
That's right.
So it's how to relate to that.
Mm-hmm. So what's left after we let go of, experientially, what might someone expect if they start to let go of their thinking process the way you're suggesting? What might they experience?
You experience yourself as more immediately the awareness itself, the witness, what it is to know that your consciousness, not the objects, not the scenario, the projection and the play that you usually sucked into, but the absurd, like you're actually, keeping with the movie metaphor, you're the projectionist in the projection booth of
uh-huh.
your story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's like sitting back and back and knowing that you are actually original awareness itself. One image is tabula rasa, the blank blackboard before it's been written on.
Mm-hmm.
If you could just taste that,
mm-hmm.
if you could just know that priority of mind before the activities and all that, all the engagement, that's liberating,
mm-hmm.
and it comes and goes with practice, but it's a real refreshing
mm-hmm.
view.
Mm-hmm. So there's an actual experience that we can talk about that isn't the same from day to day and isn't the same for everybody, but it's an experience that we can touch into.
It's often referred to as mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
Another concept similar to that is choiceless awareness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're always engaged in choices. It's all programmed, habitual, subconscious, one after the other, preferences,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
projections, processing your history and your ideas. But if you can just feel what it's like to have complete awareness without preference,
mm.
without manifesting anything to do about it, that's choiceless awareness.
Mm-hmm. And freedom.
Basically, mm-hmm. right, it's a type of mental freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you practice, the mm-hmm. more liberating it is.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do away with your pains and problems and suffering,
mm-hmm.
but it gives you a different vantage point that really works.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to go to a break here in just a minute and come back with Lonnie Brown, who's talking to us about what is enlightenment and how we can relate ourselves and our spiritual journey to what's going on the planet. And we'll invite your calls when we come back. We'll just go to a couple of promotional and public service announcements. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Psychoacoustics is the scientific study of sound perception. Psychoacoustics is also a full-spectrum music show on Thursday afternoons from 2 to 4 in between Real Jazz and the Dead Hour. On Psychoacoustics, you can hear new music from the WKNH library and music that's been around for a while. Rock, pop, reggae, electronica, jazz, blues, world beat, chamber music, symphonica. Tony picks the music and takes requests on 358-TUNE, and Larry shows up when he can to chat about life and the times. Listen for Psychoacoustics on Thursdays from 2 to 4, right here on WKNH.
Elderly Americans are seeing their way clear to a free eye exam that may save their sight. Eye Care America's Seniors Eye Care Program offers eye exams and up to 1 year of treatment at no cost. The program is for U.S. citizens or legal residents who are 65 years of age or older and have not seen an ophthalmologist in 3 years. To learn more, call 1-800-222-EYES or visit www.icareamerica.org.
And we are here in the studios, WKNH, with Lonnie Brown, the author of Self-Actuated Healing and Enlightenment in Our Time, also a local holistic practitioner, and someone who's written a lot and appeared on various programs. And, Lonnie, I wonder if you can tell us just a little bit about, before we kind of move in, continue with the enlightenment thing, just tell us a little bit about the kind of work that you do with people.
Well, with people on a one-to-one basis and small
yes.
groups,
mm-hmm.
it's called holistic health counseling, which is a big umbrella for self-care, and it's a branch of behavioral medicine, and it has to do with natural intervention and lifestyle changes and things like that. I will just basically interview somebody and find out all the ways that they can improve their condition, lives, and, you know, success. That's why it's called holistic. And then we sort of tailor a program for individual needs and capacities. It could include something like smoking cessation. I've done that successfully with some people. With, you might say, a smorgasbord of modalities for behavioral modification,
mm-hmm.
including meditation and maybe even hypnosis, some biofeedback for stress reduction. There's a lot of different approaches. Depends on the person's capabilities.
Indeed. And I also read that you were part of an intentional community some time back, and
much time back.
Hidden Springs community, but I think it speaks to something that's still, you know, on the minds of a lot of people these days, given what's going on in the economic climate and the social climate. And can you tell us a little bit about that community and what you learned from that, and you know,
yes.
what of that experience you feel is relevant to, you know, where we might be going?
Well, that was in the early 70s. I was part of the alternative or community or back to the land movement in New England particularly.
Mm-hmm.
We called it intentional community, and it was quite a network of communes and sustainable farms and so on in its heyday. I learned a lot about homesteading skills and arts and crafts and low budget agriculture. It was very, very enriching. And I recommend that type of cooperation for anybody that would like to. But you asked what I learned. And one of the things is that when you join a group, it's like getting married times 10. So it's not enough to just sort of all sort of stumble in and say we're intentional. What I learned is that you need a guiding, overriding, overarching vision that everybody agrees on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just social. It's got to be visionary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just like any successful partnership mm-hmm. or marriage or, you know, business arrangement, I think it's got to transcend personality.
In a way, isn't that, though, what we're needing to do at the level of community to really overcome some of the divisiveness that we find happening and to become more sustainable for the long term?
When you talk about community, I think you're talking about sort of regional agglomerations and cooperations and probably growing food and so on. That's what you mean by sustainable.
Well, I think of sustainable, I think of certainly that and the environmental aspect, but I also
yes.
think of the social aspect and inclusiveness.
Right.
And, you know,
what
you know,
I'm fascinated by is now we have all kinds of community that we participate in different levels, and only some of them are regional
mm-hmm.
because there's there's communities of interest.
Mm-hmm.
There's political community that you partake of every time you make a donation or vote. You know, we actually exist on many levels of community.
Indeed.
There's this sort of like you and I met through the so-called New Age community,
mm-hmm.
which is now global.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it could happen in Oshkosh, it can happen anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's my sort of like take mm-hmm. on that. So. Yeah, there's more community than ever, actually, in a shrinking world. Unfortunately, there's this sort of like communities of exploitation, a community of hatred,
mm-hmm.
retrogressive forces can communalize too. You know, community is a way of just identifying more with a group and less with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that has inherent powers, and it has inherent dangers.
Mm.
The sort of like one of the extreme distortions of community is cult,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. where you hand over your own intellectual capacity to the dogma and the authority of somebody else,
mm-hmm.
and everybody's all in lockstep and sort of myopic and so on.
Mm-hmm.
That can happen
mm-hmm.
in any community.
Or in a nation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes me think of the this sort of importance of meta-community.
Mm-hmm.
A community of communities.
Mm-hmm.
One step up.
And hold that thought, because I do want to remind people that they can give us a call. You can ask questions of Lonnie on the air, 358-8863. That's 358-8863. If you have a question about holistic healing or about enlightenment or about any of these topics that we're talking about, I'm sure we'd love to hear from you, so just give us a call, 358-8863. And you, Lonnie, were talking about meta-community. What is
yes.
meta-community?
Overarching organization of like-minded people with no boundaries, no borders. You know, sort of like meta implies the larger umbrella that can happen in almost any segment of human endeavors.
Mm-hmm.
You might say it's transnational, global, ad hoc meta community came together in response to the tsunamis and the disaster in the Indian Ocean.
That's right.
And that, you know, for all the disaster, for all the pain and suffering, that was a very hopeful level of cooperation
mm-hmm.
among disparate factions in one country, among countries and private organizations, and of course the UN and so on.
Mm-hmm.
It's still going on. There's more to be done, but I saw, in a way, a type of maturation in the global response
mm-hmm.
that is heartening.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting to kind of see how during that time there was kind of a increasing the stakes of how much are we going to take responsibility or become a stakeholder in this. And it seemed like, you know, people were coming up and saying, well, we'll give $5 million. Well, now we'll give 15. Now we'll give $350 million. And it just kept going, and people began to realize that, you know, we really have to take this on. It can't just be at the level of dollars, but it has to be at the level of every human faculty that we can possibly apply to the situation, especially the faculty of, or perhaps first and foremost, the faculty of compassion.
Yes.
Yeah.
I really think that most people are people of goodwill and have that basic compassion and wish to help.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like we need to channel it. We need to make it possible. And it comes back to publicity and PR, you
mm-hmm.
know, because
mm-hmm.
that's where you reach the mass audience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you're familiar with Stephen Simon. He's he's the producer of What Dreams May Come.
Oh.
And he's been on a one-man quest to get spiritual cinema recognized as a genre in Hollywood, actually. And has produced most recently the Indigo movie, which you may have heard about.
I have heard about it.
With Neil Donald Walsh and James Twyman.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is, you know, so just to underscore what you're saying, there is, you know, other reasons for hope. And there is a concerted effort on the part of many individuals, sometimes they're called the cultural creatives, to, you know, forward this more inclusive, ecologically aware, environmentally aware, philosophy, I guess, yes. way of being into the world. And there seems to be a lot of openness because I think we realize in some ways that things are not working the way, you know, the status quo is not really functioning, and we have to kind of do things differently for all of our maturity level technologically in some way. You know,
we're going through growing pains in almost every arena of human endeavor, whether it be the healthcare system or education. You know, it's a lot of upheaval. And some people, some groups respond with, you know, retrogressive fear and conservative is, if that's the right word. But it's also, like I said, a time of upheaval or rapid change is also laden, is just pregnant with potential for positive influence. It's like steering the vector at the beginning, mm-hmm. and that angle that you can steer the little beginning can have a tremendous effect on the ultimate direction that we're going.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I try to champion the highest applications and usage of the media mm-hmm. and so on.
So we're talking a lot about collective reality, meta-community, and collective reality and collective response. And I want to go back to this issue of enlightenment. Mm-hmm. And I want to just say I listened to some of Andrew Cohen's work, and he talks a lot about evolutionary enlightenment, which is about not really about me or about my comfort, but it's about recognizing that, you know, each of us is a participant in a larger movement of creation that's been kind of going on for 15 billion years, and we're becoming more conscious of ourselves, which is might be understood as creation becoming more conscious of itself. But
yes.
still, I inhabit a body. Still, I have, you know, survival needs. I have to have a job and various other things. And how does meditation and spiritual practice assist me in responding to the types of challenges that I'm faced with today? How does it assist me? How does it assist others when I turn on the TV and see the, you know, continuing, you know, people being blown up in Iraq or that sort of thing? Well, how does it help us with that?
You know, what comes to mind is equanimity and balance, you know. So we have an ability to have a sane, objective, basically, a clear view of the world, no matter what it happens to throw at us. It certainly is the case that we live in strange times. There's danger, there's uncertainty, and a high degree of change. But I think that people have the potential of reaching a sort of centeredness, you might call it, an inner balance. And the word equanimity really applies so well. And it's not that difficult. It just takes practice.
So the equanimity brings us to a place where we can think and feel more clearly and with less opposition or less, perhaps, violence in our thoughts or less despondency?
Less reactivity. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference between reacting and responding. And I think the meditation gives you that edge. The choice factor, the presence of mind, even in emergency, even in high, when it's high stakes, whatever we have to deal with, it seems to help to be able to have that sort of basic clarity mm-hmm. to proceed from.
Mm-hmm. And then what? Because I hear the question in the back of many people's minds is, well, it's all well and good to contemplate our navel and be calm and, you know, blissful, but what does that mean? How is that going to change things in the world? How do we transform that into action? And what is that? What does that action look like if it's you know, has its foundation in calm and peace?
You know, to me and all my teachers, the point of meditation is really the application in life, in real life, in action, in choice, in engagement. It's not the ultimate object of sitting on your cushion still and removed. It's empowering to come from that sense of center into your responsible world, into the potential creativity and the difference that you could make. So I see no separation between the practice of being quiet, you might say, is sometimes called sitting, sometimes called meditation, sometimes called contemplation, or even prayer.
Mm-hmm.
But the real point is what you do with it,
mm-hmm.
how you act in the world of humans, and that's the potential,
mm-hmm.
the rich focus of this capability you've developed.
So when we see large things happening, however, on the world stage, wars and famines, and you know, besides sending our dollars over there or whatever, what can the individual do? What can one person realistically do?
If you're interested in peace, and this is not an original thought, Thich Nhat Hanh, I think, actually titled one of his books, Be Peace. We can all start where we are in our hearts and manifest on a personal level first the way we would like the world to behave, some sort of presence and sanity. That is your contribution. And there's no such thing as too small or too local. In fact, I've come to realize that's where all change has to begin. And it's hopeful in the sense that you don't have to wait for big successes and powerful interventions and global changes. You do this every day in how you relate to your family, your neighbor, your coworkers. It's the next, you know, the practical definition of spirituality is how you relate to the next person you meet. And it's a tremendous opportunity, which unfortunately a lot of people miss.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where the rubber meets the road. And if we all sort of like proceeded from that basic goodwill and spiritual intention, another word for spiritual would be sort of unifying, I think it would become part of global change.
Mm-hmm. So you're really,
it is, actually.
So you're saying start with the single step in front of you, and
mm-hmm.
and then the larger steps will in some way take care of themselves?
Sure. I mean, I see it as concentric spheres of influence.
Mm-hmm.
First, the only thing you can change is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about mind state and intention and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will naturally have that type of positive effect on your loved ones and the people closest to you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like spheres, concentric spheres, your family, your community, your nation, and the world.
Mm-hmm.
And picture this as like literally, it's almost become like a cliche, but points of light. You don't have to be a beacon,
mm-hmm.
but just think of the collective, cumulative effect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when we see things going awry in our government and maybe get involved with whole group efforts to try to change things, and yet we're still, we might be despondent that things might change. You know, the political process mm-hmm. may be years behind, you know, where your average person is, one could say, in terms of really being caught up in polarization and caught up in power plays. And mm-hmm. right now you could really say a lot of corruption. And I think it's hard for a lot of people to see a way through that, to see that that can change easily. And what would you say to that kind of person with that question, or what they could do, or how they could shift their frame on it to be more hopeful?
You know, one shift of frame is that the politicians don't account for all of our leadership. Real leadership and inspirational exampling and modeling comes in from all other types of arenas. In fact, politics by nature is sort of like putting your finger in the wind and finding out which way it's blowing, or checking out where the parade is and trying to get in front of it. So I look for real leadership in other arenas. My heroes are like engaged people like Rod Redford in the environmental movement. And mm-hmm. I mentioned Thich Nhat Hanh as a teacher. And these people are the change agents outside of just governmental institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going on all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we can easily, with this type of media exposure that we're used to, confuse leadership with celebrity, you know.
Indeed.
That's not quite it.
Indeed. Well, we've got about another 9 or so minutes to the program. We've covered a lot of territory, and I'm wondering if we could shift to talking a little bit about the body-mind connection, which I know is a favorite topic of yours, and
yes.
Certainly you engage in a lot of your work and with individuals around the body-mind connection. And
yes.
And I don't know if you recently read the book, well, actually, it's a couple of years old now, The Field by Lynn McTaggart. And
no.
Talking about a lot of things I'm sure you'd be familiar with in terms of the effect of consciousness on matter, things like homeopathy and
yes.
things like messages from water of this
yes,
Japanese,
I'm familiar
right?
with that.
Yeah, what can you tell us about what's the latest and greatest about the body-mind connection? What should your average individual be aware of?
Okay, well, you've asked the right person. I'm actually teaching a course at Mount Wachusett Community College in Gardner, Mass. Called mm-hmm. Psychoneuroimmunology.
Ah.
And that's a
See
long
that three times
yeah.
Yeah.
That's a long as a clinical term for mm-hmm. basically mind body healing.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it's so exciting and cutting edge is because we really have now mapped that cascade connection between our thoughts or any mental events,
mm-hmm.
our brain,
mm-hmm.
that's the neurology
mm-hmm.
and nervous system. And the blood, the immune factors. This is all very, very recent discoveries.
Mm-hmm.
How they relate. Bottom line, it matters what you expect, think, believe, pray for even, because you're actually going to the roots or you're going to the original level of how the mind and then affects the brain and then through the neuronal and hormonal and the synapses and the electrochemical messages throughout the body can actually boost your immune system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the hospital of the future, as far as I'm concerned, will have just as much meditation as medication.
Mm.
They're equally vital. In other words, you can, to a certain degree, do things like raise your white blood cell count through mind-based techniques. People are doing it. Lower your blood pressure. Though, to me, the treatment of choice now for one of the great killers of our society, hypertension, high blood pressure,
mm-hmm.
is biofeedback.
Mm.
Strictly auto-regulatory practice.
Mm-hmm.
No invasive intervention at all. It's based on learning to actually access your own autonomic nervous system,
mm-hmm.
which up till 20 years ago was believed by Western science to be impossible.
Mm-hmm.
The autonomic nervous system beats your heart.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to think about it. In fact, they said you can't do anything about it. It goes fast when it needs to and slow when it can. Well, they were wrong. I can sit here and I can even take your listenership through an exercise in which I can guarantee that your heart rate will slow down.
Mm-hmm.
It's routine now.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that'll be a sign of real enlightenment in medicine
mm-hmm.
when you get referred to biofeedback training, guided visualization and imagery. And so it's happening.
Indeed.
It's happening.
Yeah.
And that's right. That's, you asked about the cutting edge.
That's exciting. So what would, I know this is not a, I mean, it's a science at one level, but it's also an art at another level, and each individual is different. Some individuals may be able to affect even more, perhaps tumor growth, but not everyone's equal in their capacity to do that. Is that correct?
Yes, and there's many kinds of tumors, too. Some are more amenable. Now, I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater if you have a rapid, aggressive, you know, cancer and it's proven effective to excise it and or, you know, use radiation or chemotherapy. I take the approach of what's called complementary or integrative medicine. Yes, take your chemo if that's your treatment of choice. And by the way, it should be a choice. It should be an act of empowerment. You should believe in it if you're going to do a medication or a procedure. Or don't even bother, but in combine with the scientific technological medicine, get into the basic powers of your own human mind,
mm-hmm.
and it's remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more potent and effective mm-hmm. in creating health changes than we ever really knew before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's as much of what you eat as what you think?
A diet has a big to do with it. Mm-hmm. What I tell people about diet is that as important as quality is quantity. And most Americans eat too much food, even if you're not obese. Mm-hmm. We evolved in billions of years where food was scarce and you had to exercise as much as eat just mm-hmm. to get it. Mm-hmm. And we don't have that now. Mm-hmm. So one of the chapters in my original book was about therapeutic fasting, systematic mm-hmm. under-eating, has been what's called calorie restriction, mm-hmm. has been proven to be the only clinically verifiable life extension activity,
mm-hmm.
Along with things like vegetarianism and good support. There's other factors, but mm-hmm. caloric restriction is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just got me off on diet there.
That's fine. We have to cover every angle, and we like to.
Well, it's a holistic view, isn't it?
We definitely have much more that we could talk about. What is the natural apothecary?
The brain.
Mm-hmm.
And this was originally delineated by Norman Cousins, who wrote... that's my cell phone. I'll turn it off. Norman Cousins wrote The Anatomy of an Illness and realized that our brains... said, okay, it's going to stop in a second.
I guess it is. A little musical
sorry
interview
for, that.
For our listeners.
You forgot to tell me to turn off my cell phone. Modern communications, I love it. Actually, mm-hmm. I'm a great proponent of cell phones, but you do have to turn them off. Yeah, the brain is a miraculous apothecary. In other words, a chemistry lab that appropriates it. Produces quite a range in specific quantities of communicational, hormonal messages. It's really producing these remarkable, they're called neuropeptides and neurotransmitters all the time.
And these can help us stay well, and we can access these through meditation and visualization and the
thoughts
and prayers that we hold.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. The body's own euphoric stimulants are produced through meditation as well as pain control
mm-hmm.
and, like I said, immunological boosting.
Mm-hmm. So we have just about a minute left. Why don't you tell folks again how they can get in touch with you and maybe your website again?
Sure. My website is www.holistic.com/LONNY. And holistic is spelled with an H. And they can locate my books from there.
Mm-hmm. And how can they get in touch with you?
Let's see. You can feel free to call me at 603-924-0425. Or email me at Lonnie@holistic.com.
Well, it's been a great pleasure to have you here this evening, Lonnie. And I understand that you are willing to stay on and be a major part of our second hour with Oasis Journeys.
Would love to.
And we haven't talked about the chakras, so we'll probably talk about that after we return.
Excellent.
So thanks for joining us. And we'll be back a little bit in a few minutes with Lonnie Brown, continuing our exploration into the experiential realms of Oasis Journeys. And we appreciate having you here with us. And stay tuned for Oasis Journeys.